Champion players, champion club. Melbourne wins another one.
Yes, it is! Reece Carey brings up her 200 in style.
Oh, Sam Kerr!
For all your sports news, reviews, and interviews, you listen to the Sports Desk here on Sin. Yes, good morning all, and welcome to this Monday edition of the Sports Desk here on Sin 90.7. I am Ben Pascuzzi, and we are filling in, myself and Tom Parry, who's actually come all the way from Bendigo. So we'll just quickly to Tom. We are filling in for Michael Serple and Liam O'Grady, who unfortunately cannot make the show this morning anyway. But I'm here with Tom. Tom, how was your train trip this morning?
Oh, it was all right, Ben. It's usually pretty busy on the Bendigo train, but it doesn't get busy until about Gisborne and Riddles Creek when you got the commuters. But no, otherwise, good journey. Quite cold this morning.
Actually. Yeah, it is quite chilly. It's supposed to be a top of 26, I believe, according to BOM. I checked it last night. But yeah, it is quite chilly, so I've got the long sleeve top on at the moment. You're braving it out with the T-shirt at the moment.
Yeah, I get hot whenever I'm indoors, so I just had the T-shirt on wherever.
That's beautiful stuff. Anyway, we've got a huge show coming up today. We're talking a lot of AFL, both the AFLW and the AFLX. So obviously, a lot of the Winter Olympics, which is there's been a lot of controversy, which will be going a lot into detail. There's also a bit of basketball, the NBA All-Star happening, and the NBA Finals just around the corner. And, of course, there's the A-League, the W-League, and Roger Federer, who's become the oldest world number one ever.
Yes.
So we'll be talking about that later on. But without further ado, we'll get stuck into the AFLW. And it was another, news-filled and a lot of highlights for this round. Round three it was. We'll start off with the first game. And it was between the Adelaide Crows and the Western Bulldogs. Aaron Phillips, last year's winner of just about every single award, returned for the Adelaide Crows and got them over the line, winning 6-5-41 over the Doggies 5-4-34.
Absolutely, yes. So only a small crowd, 4,900 people, but Killian gave the Crows the lead. That's Rachel Killian, sorry. And then Jenna McCormick kicked the second goal of the match after the siren. So
their second goal, after the siren. So it was a tight match throughout the whole match there between the two teams. And after the Doggies were unbeaten going into this match, of course.
Oh, they were too, yeah.
Yeah, so they could have gone 3-0, but yeah, the Crows with Phillips just coming back were too good. And in fact, because we should also mention Erin Phillips, she tied for the most goals ever kicked in a game of AFLW with 4. Obviously tying with her teammate there, Sarah Perkins, who did it in round 7 last year, and Vessio of Carlton, who did it in round 1. So she scored 4 goals too, so she could have easily gone atop there for the most goals in a AFLW match, but wasn't to be. But nevertheless, her presence pretty much freed up Sarah Perkins, because Sarah Perkins, the big-bodied forward there for the Crows, she was playing one out pretty much the first two games, and she only was able to receive or get the footy 4 times. So she was only able to record 4 disposals over those two matches. And the Crows, obviously, they'd still keep banging it in there to her, because she did kick 11 goals last season. So she was a powerful force. But yeah, yesterday, even though she didn't kick any goals, she was able to push up the ground and she recorded 11 disposals. So it's good to see her sort of back in form. And it's amazing what a difference it can make to a team. And yeah, the Crows getting that 7-point victory, that's going to be huge for them, and that brings them equal top, I believe, because the Lions obviously are on top of the ladder after their win against Carlton, which we might as well get stuck into, I reckon.
Yeah, let's go for it, yeah.
Because there's a bit of talking about the lighting there.
Indeed it was. So, the Icon match, which was on, was it Saturday or Sunday?
Saturday night.
Saturday night, yes, thanks, Ben. So it was played late into the evening, a very small crowd, which I found surprising. But, there was a complaint that the lights weren't strong enough to see the ball and the players in the field. And that was my understanding anyway, which is really extraordinary, because you'd think, being like the premier women's event, they'd have a ground which is capable of, keeping the lights on.
Especially a ground such as Icon Park.
Yeah,
sorry, I'll get back to Adelaide. They're actually their first win of the season. My bad.
Oh, okay.
I just thought they won another match. That's all right.
Yeah, but the lighting was poor. And also, Icon Park, it was the last suburban ground to host an AFL game, yep. like however many years ago
I
now.
I think it was mid-2000s.
And they spent thousands of dollars refurbishing it. But anyway, enough about the lighting. It was a good game from Brisbane's point of view. Anyway, so they absolutely dominated in the match. 6 goals, 4 behinds, 40 points all up. Carlton, they, had a couple of goals in there, but otherwise, not their day.
Yeah, well, they're mainly a defensive team, Carlton, and their defence has come under a lot of scrutiny over the first 3 rounds of the season. And pretty much that first half, there was only 1 goal kicked, and obviously that was going to Brisbane. But, yeah, their running game was just completely shut down by the Blues there. And then, obviously, in that second half, tired bodies and the fact that they're not... not match fit. I'm not going to say that. It's like they're not really conditioned to go at it at the same pace as, say, the first half yet. It's going to obviously take them a couple of years to do that. And that was showing in the second half as the game just completely opened up. The Lions were able to run free and, they were able to kick 5 goals there to the Blues too in that second half. So they won there by 22 points. That win puts the Lions atop the AFLW table. They do lead the Demons only by percentage. Who they lost yesterday in an upset loss to the Dockers.
Upset loss, yes indeed. So it was a particularly low scoring game. Freo in the end they won by 5 points, but they are more consistent in front of goals. So they got 6 goals to the D's 4, and the D's also got 7 behinds. Wasn't all bad for the Demons. Teagan Cunningham, she top scored with 2 goals, 2 behinds. Daisy Pierce, she had the most disposals for the match with 24. Didn't kick any goals, though, which was disappointing. Also interesting, the Dockers didn't score at all in the first quarter, and they scored their 2 goals to win the match in the last quarter of the game.
Quite incredible stuff there. So the Dockers, they move. They're pretty much also an equal top. We'll go through the ladder after we review this final match anyway between Collingwood and GWS, and GWS winning only their second game in AFLW history. In AFLW history, they defeated the Magpies 48 to 35, and that loss propels the Magpies to 3 from 3 losses.
Yes, so that does that put them at the bottom of the table? Or?
Yep, dead last.
Yeah, dead last, there we go. So, yeah, nothing new for Collingwood. I shouldn't say that. Mo Hope, she kicked 2 goals for the game, the star for the Magpies, but only 8 disposals. So you mentioned before, Ben, about having a star player on the team. She's the kind of player who can turn a game around, but no, in this game she was pretty soft. So there is a danger in letting all your hopes rest on that one player, but...
Pardon the pun.
Yeah.
What's it called? She showed more hope, I guess you can say. She showed more potential in this match than in previous matches, because obviously last season she was heavily hampered by that injury that she copped. So she was pretty much injured the whole season. So unfortunately for her, she hasn't really shown the form that we saw in that, I believe it was in 2016, there was a match between the Doggies and Melbourne in one of those exhibition matches, and she just turned it on for the Bulldogs there. So... she hasn't really shown that form yet. Hopefully she does show it soon. But yeah, 9 disposals, nevertheless, still an improvement for Mo Hope. So we'll go through the ladder. So as we said, Brisbane, my girls, are leading at the moment. We are only 2 percentage points ahead of the Demons, who sit in second, who are a further 2 percentage points ahead of the Doggies. So it's really tight up there. Also on equal points, but a further percentage down, are Carlton and Fremantle, who round out a top 5, I guess you could say. And then GWS, Adelaide are both locked in on 1 win and 2 losses. And then obviously the Magpies there, who have yet to win a game for the season. All right, so after this, we'll be talking a bit. We'll be sticking with AFL. We'll be talking some AFLX and any of the controversial news, especially Jordan DeGoey, who unfortunately for the Magpies looks like he's going to get fined and suspended for a drink driving incident. But we'll get stuck into that right after this. You're listening to the Sports Desk here on Sin 90.7 with Ben and Tom, and we're going to stick with the AFL, and we're going to get into the new format, the AFLX, and that was played over the weekend. Initial thoughts on it, Tom?
I watched the first game on Thursday night and just, you know, took a casual interest in the rest of the games over the weekend. But, I found it quite exciting, actually. I don't think it would work with people who are already familiar with the game. So I think Channel 7 described it as doing for AFL what Big Bash did for the cricket. And I think that's exactly what this is. It's bringing in people into the game. It's more exciting. If they're going to take it overseas, I think that it would definitely work, like drawing people in there. But as for like an AFL, a format of AFL, no, it's just, the real thing's much better.
Yeah, obviously the real thing's much better. But this, I think they were talking about this could be introduced, say, for junior footy or like an os kick or something.
I was actually thinking that watching the game.
It's absolutely perfect. So there's obviously, this game can and does have the potential to go international, I believe, and I think potentially you believe also. But I think there does need to be a couple of tinkering with the rules, perhaps. And one thing that was notable throughout all the matches is pretty much just the players just bombing it, obviously, going for the super goals. But there's no one back, no one in their goal square. So I remember BT, he was saying, Brian Taylor, for the Channel 7 commentary team. For those that don't know, BT legend. What he was saying was maybe have a 25-meter arc and make it compulsory from one player from the attacking team or the defensive team, potentially both. They have to be within that 25-meter arc. So could you see something like that?
That would definitely work. So I think that rule would fit. Yeah, so it's sort of like netball, really. Have you got the goalkeeper, goal shooter, things like that? So, or maybe even better, you could have some players condensed into that.
So it would just have a full netball thing, so just like the forward half, middle,
that's exactly
like a
right. Yes. another thing actually I noticed about the games was there was constant scoring, and whenever they took shots of the crowd, they just all looked completely bored. It's like, oh, there goes another goal. Yeah, there you are.
Yeah, so, I remember Chris Fagan, Brisbane coach, he came on and said that, that's probably one of the disappointments, the fact that the players don't get to celebrate the goals, the fans don't get to celebrate the goals, so... What could happen, dude? Because obviously the game's free-flowing. There's no time on, just 10 minutes bang on in. And obviously there is no time to celebrate. What do you reckon needs to happen?
Air horns, probably.
Air horns.
Or maybe sirens, I don't know. Flames, like they do at the Big Bash, I don't know.
The goal's lit up.
Oh, yeah, that's true, yes. But they need...
It's not noticeable at all.
Yeah, so something like louder, something to get the crowd involved. So
maybe even just bring the ball back in the middle.
All that, that might work.
I know they're bringing it in from the back line, and I'm not against that, but maybe they do need to bring the ball into the middle as quick as possible, and then the players can actually celebrate goals, because that's a huge part of the game. So, anyway, we'll get stuck into the results of the AFLX. So, obviously, the Friday Sports Desk went in depth about the Adelaide one, and that went to the Crows, who defeated the Geelong Cats in the first AFLX final, 55-47. In Melbourne, it was on Friday night, the Demons getting over the line over the Hawks, both teams winning their two respective group matches. The Demons too good for the Hawks in the final, 56-46. And then obviously on Saturday, it was twilight there in Sydney. It was a final between the Brisbane Lions and the Sydney Swans, with my boys, the Brisbane Lions, getting a win there, 67-41.
Weren't they the Wooden Spooners last year with the AFL?
Yes, we were.
So that's interesting, the fact that they've come in here during the AFLX preseason and they've won that match there against the Swans. So, I don't know whether that's any indication of how they're going to go this year.
But... Usually I'm like... Oh, I don't even know. I didn't even know how to celebrate that. It's just a bit weird. Obviously, we won. Yes. It's just cool. AFLX. Well, actually, speaking of winning and the trophy, what would you make of that, the plastic blue X?
It just looks like a novelty, really. It's like the sort of thing they hang out at junior soccer games for participating in the teams. But, nice thing, maybe adorning the kitchen table or something like that. Wine holder, maybe. I don't know. But... yeah, it just seemed a little bit flimsy given the ostentatiousness of the event.
Fair enough. And also, we'll just mention a controversy, I guess you could say, from the Sydney tournament. It was the Western Bulldogs who fielded an extremely inexperienced side, and they got absolutely walloped in their two games. So they lost their first game to the Sydney Swans, 88-36, a margin there, 52 points. And then they went on to lose their second match against the Gold Coast Suns, 87-22, a margin of 65.
So, yeah, it's pretty sorry to see. But, you know, these young guys, they need this training. They need, like, obviously you can't do it during the premiership season because they'll get annihilated. So if they can do it during the preseason, give them some experience, I think that's good for the game and good for them.
There were talks that the Dogs didn't take it seriously by bringing in these, fielding an inexperienced side.
Well, why would you, really? I mean, it's the AFLX. It doesn't count for anything.
Do you think they took it seriously?
So, no, I don't think they did at all. You know, it's just like, well, I don't think any of the teams did, really. It's just kind of like kicking practice. In fact, Richard Hines at the ABC, he referred to it as a hollow yawn fest. Players had no interest in taking part in the game. So, yeah, so that's one of the criticisms I've read. But I think most of the feedback has been positive about the AFLX. That's my understanding.
Also, yeah, they got rid of the silver ball on Adelaide. I'm not sure if you were able to watch it, but yeah, it was great from the AFL to finally, I guess, because usually when they implement something or when competitions implement a new rule or a new, I guess you can call this an object, equipment, whatever you want to call it, they usually get rid of it. They usually just keep it for the duration of the tournament. But it was great to see the AFL get rid of it after the third game when they're just like, yeah, players, you can't see it on TV. It's just shocking. So I thought that was a really good move from the AFL. Thoughts there?
It honestly didn't bother me. I mean, I was just watching it and I just thought they're kicking around a silver ball. So, yep, that's unusual, but, you know, I'm okay with that. But and honestly, I didn't notice it. Didn't notice them take it away either. So, yeah, that's really bad on my part.
And that's probably you just getting used to seeing the yellow ball and just reverting back to your normal
that's probably the case,
viewing experience. Yeah. All right, we'll move on from AFLX to a bit of a downer for Collingwood, the Collingwood Football Club, and that was Jordan DeGoey on Saturday night. He was caught blowing over the legal limit almost twice. He was 0.95, I think it is. Anyway, this is the second incident in two seasons for DeGoey where he's come under indiscretion. Obviously, in last season, supposedly he said he'd broken his hand or injured his hand throwing a frisbee with his dog, but it turned out it was during a bar fight. And then subsequently he was suspended by the Magpies. I believe he was fined $5,000 and he was suspended for about 3 weeks, I believe it was,
that
or 6 weeks.
About right.
Yeah, whatever it was, because then he went into the VFL team and came back rightfully into the AFL squad. But second time, he's on his green piece, so he's obviously not supposed to be drinking at all.
Oh, dear.
What kind of suspension do you reckon the Collingwood Football Club will impose on DeGoey, who is such a young talent and he's easily in their best 22? So what do they do?
I don't know whether suspension is going to curb the problem at all. I think what they really need to do is, maybe set him aside, say what you're doing is wrong, you know, rehabilitate him in a way, teach him like to drink responsibly and things like that, because I don't think a solid suspension is going to get him like to change his habits or anything like that. Maybe if they took football away from him altogether, like he couldn't play in the VFL or something like that, possibly that might work. But no, until they speak with him directly and try to address this problem, I don't think a suspension is going to do him much good at all.
Well, I was listening to SEN this morning and they were talking about they got the callers to call in and give suggestions about potential punishment or suspensions for DeGoey, and I think the one that most of them were in agreement on is he does need to be suspended. So they obviously fine him the $5,000 and he'll be suspended for at least 4 weeks or however many it is, because obviously the AFL Players Association, if Collingwood are too lenient on it, the AFL Association, Players Association that is, can obviously up the ante there on the suspension. But there are also talks that he may need to see families who have been affected by drink driving incidents, so he can actually see what his actions, the effect it could have had if it was to be more serious, obviously. But another one I like is taking the privilege. Obviously, he cannot get his license for 6 months, but what an idea I liked was that instead of letting players take him to training or whatnot, he actually has to catch public transport.
Oh, yes. No, I like the sound of that, actually. Yeah, that would probably teach him. But just slightly off topic here, do you reckon there's like a drinking problem within the AFL or drinking culture within the AFL that's affecting us? Or?
It probably is. There's always like this, the boys club and all that with AFL. So there definitely is. And it's most notably in recent seasons come from like the Rat Pack and Collingwood and all that. So maybe that does need to be addressed by the AFL and Collingwood. Who knows? But yeah, there's always... It's pretty much in all professional sports. So.
Yeah, I mean, in Bendigo, we have a similar problem. I don't like talking my town down, but a lot of the country football lads, they kind of get together on weekends, have a few beers, and it just doesn't look good. Mm. Like, I mean, there are lots of people, particularly younger people, looking up to them, and they're being antisocial and what have you. But, I mean, the AFL, I think they do have a handle on it, because we don't hear all these shocking stories all the time, but it is something that it will need to look at going forward.
Without a doubt. All right, that wraps up AFL, both the W and X. We'll be talking the Winter Olympics after this. You're listening to Sports Desk here on Sin 90.7 with Ben and Tom, and we're going to get stuck into the Winter Olympics.
Yes, indeed we are. So lots of highlights from the past week or so, the Winter Olympics. The one I wanted to get into first was actually an American who I was really smitten by, Chloe Kim. She's only 17 years old. This is her first Winter Olympics, and she won gold in the snowboarding halfpipe. Yes. Absolutely brilliant talent. She scored a near perfect result on her first run, and everyone thought, well, there's no way she can better this one. And then the second run, she scored even higher. Like, it was just absolutely incredible, and definitely a talent to look out for in the future.
For a 17-year-old, that's just incredible to put up with the pressure of an Olympics campaign to do that, especially in the second run.
And she did actually qualify for Sochi 4 years ago when she was 13, but the American Olympic Committee said that she couldn't join because she was too young. So, yeah, definitely a talent to watch out for in the future. And while we're on snowboarding, actually, Shaun White, also an American, he became the first person to win 3 gold medals in the snowboarding halfpipe event. And in the same event, Aussie's Scotty James got bronze. So, yeah, great result there for both Australia and for Shaun. There was a bit of controversy earlier in the week because it revealed that he might have engaged in sexual misconduct with one of his former bandmates. But still, he's been great for the game. Aside from that, I don't know, you know, if he's going to come back from that one. But anyway, we shall move on to some of the other Australians who've made the headlines. Jared Hughes, he got a silver in the snowboarding cross, which is basically downhill skating crossed with snowboarding.
Mm-hmm.
In the same event, Alex Pullen, who was the medal favourite, actually, for Australia, he came fifth after being knocked down halfway through the race, and there's also a bit of animosity between the two, apparently. Just, I think it's something to do with egos colliding, which is not uncommon in sports. I'm sure you've heard many stories, Ben.
Oh, for sure.
Yes.
Ego's part of sports.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah. What other Australians have we got here? In the women's moguls, we had two finalists. Jakara Anthony, who's in her first game, she came fourth. And Olympic veteran Britt Cox, who was in fifth place in the same event. In the men's events, Matt Graham, who I believe was our flag bearer at the opening ceremony, he got a silver in the moguls event, so very well done there. And I think that's it for the Australians. Another one, just while we were mentioning the American Olympians before, Mirai Nagasu became the third female athlete in the history of the games to perform a triple axel, which is basically the triple spin in figure skating. So, yeah, that would be my highlights for the games. Ben, what would be your highlight, you reckon?
I love, to be honest, the Winter Olympics. If there's, I'm not trying to put down the Winter Olympics. If there's other sports on, I'll watch that. But I don't actually mind watching the Winter Olympics. And my highlight probably be the, I don't know why. I just like the aerial skiing. And who was the Aussie last night who he missed out by a place? It was controversially some. Who was the Chinese?
Yes, it was David Morris.
Yes,
so
David
Morris.
Men's
aerials. So yeah, he just missed out on a place.
It's controversial because I can't think of the Chinese bloke's name. He finished second in the final, but he was knocked out in the second stage. And reason was because obviously the Chinese skier, he got a higher score than him, but the landing of his, he was clean for about, I think the ruling is 4 metres, and obviously he lost control, and there's been a huge uproar whether or not he did have control in Australian media. I think he did. Mm. I think it was fair enough. He had control for what a good 4 metres and unfortunately fell over.
I would think so. I mean, if you can make the landing, I mean, yeah. that's incredible in itself. Because
that's such a hard sport because you look at it and you think, oh, okay, you could do that. But just seeing the coaches and the fact that they've got to wait such a long time, you got to, because it's pretty much all weather. Mm. And it's just like the amount of wind or whatever can have a huge effect on your jump and whether or not you land it. Because the Australian girl on, she was in the final, it was on, when was it, Friday night? I was having a quick peek
Lydia Lassler.
Was it Lassler?
Yeah, I'd have to double check that. But anyway, keep going, Ben.
Yeah, she, I can't think of her name at the moment. But yeah, she was affected by the wind, unfortunately. She had everything right, and then obviously the landing was just a bit off. So she went overboard and, yeah, unfortunately wasn't able to take out a medal, even though she was a very good chance of it. Mm. But yeah, just the wind and all these environmental factors affecting this event. And yeah, it's quite the spectacle. So yeah, the aerial skiing for me, the aerials for me was my highlight.
Yeah, so just double-checking that, it is Lydia Lassler. We did have that one right. So to be fair, this is, like, I think, her fifth games now. Started at Salt Lake City, went through until now, and she has retired. And it's disappointing to see her go out on such a low note, but she did win gold at the last games, and she's been absolutely incredible for the sport. So good to see. You know, we seem to have a lot of luck with aerial skiing, because remember... Alyssa Camplin, I think her name was. So all
Rings
the way
bell,
back in
yeah.
Salt Lake, she was the first, Australian Olympian to win gold at the Winter Olympics. The first being, of course, our favourite speed skating friend. I've forgotten his name too. Oh dear, this is the problem of the Winter Olympics. They come around every 4 years and we don't know who anybody is. It's just sad. We will research that for you. So, shall we go to a song, Ben?
We'll quickly go through the medal standing. So,
oh, yes,
for Australia, we sit in 21st, I believe it is. Mm. Obviously, no golds yet. 2 silvers, 1 bronze. So, we have got a total tally of 3 medals there. For the rest of the leaders, it is Norway who sit with a total of 26 medals. Mm-hmm. They got 9 gold, 9 silver, and 8 bronze. And then Germany are in second, who have got 18 medals, 9 gold, 5 silver, and 4 bronze. The USA, they are in fifth. Yeah, they're in fifth with a total of 10 medals. Only 5 gold for them. So, obviously, Norway leading the way and Australia well down the bottom.
That's typical for the Winter Olympics. I think Norway are the one of the most medals out of any Winter Olympic team. So, yeah, there you have it.
You'd say it snows there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, actually, speaking of like Australia and lack of snow here, there's rumours that we may be making a bid for the 2026 Winter Olympics.
Oh, good.
And
that'd
be hosting in the Blue Mountains.
Yeah, I really can't see that happening. I mean, typically because even though it does snow in Australia, obviously, there isn't like the just steady snowfall that you get in the Northern Hemisphere.
Yeah.
And, you know...
Apparently there's more snowfall than South Korea, which is obviously where the current Winter Olympics is.
That's interesting. But I think the other problem that Australia has is that we don't have the facilities, really, to cater for so many people. I mean, Sochi, when they hosted, they spent millions and millions of dollars trying to make their venues Olympic-worthy. Mm-hmm. And so if Australia were to do the same, we'd just be, like, bleeding dry, basically.
And would we even use it?
No, we wouldn't, because no, as we said, no one really takes an interest in Winter Olympic sports in
Australia. Unfortunately, yeah, because it's not hugely popular in this country. So,
Who knows? It's either Summer Olympics or cricket or one of the football codes for us.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. All right, after this, we'll be getting into some basketball, both the NBA and the NBL. Well, you're listening to Sports Desk here on Sin 90.7 with Ben and Tom. And before we get into basketball, we did make a mistake. It was actually Laura Peel who made the final of the women's aerial skiing. She ended up finishing in fifth place there, so apologies there.
Yeah, and also the speed skater was Stephen Bradbury. I don't know how I forgot that name, but I did. But anyway, let's move on to NBA, Ben.
Before NBA, to mention at the start of the show, we do have a text line that we're trolling here at Sin. It's, the number is 0447-519-170. So if you do have any thoughts or any queries, any questions, whatever you want, text us through again. The number 0447-751 9170. All right, we'll get stuck into the NBA, and it is All-Star Weekend there over there in Los Angeles. And before we do get stuck into the All-Star festivities, we'll have a quick look at the standings at the All-Star break. So starting off with the Eastern Conference, it is the Toronto Raptors who do lead the Eastern Conference. They've got 41 wins and 16 losses with a win streak of 7. So they're on fire there, the Raptors. They're ahead of, obviously, the Celtics and the Cavs. The Cavs are starting to produce string a couple of good performances together. They have got 4 on the trot, and their tally for the season so far is 34-22. So the Cavs definitely are looking good there and potentially could finish as high as second. They could obviously finish as high as first, but obviously the trades in before the trade deadline has boosted their roster significantly, and they are playing free-flowing basketball. So good to see there for LeBron and the Cavs. Moving lower in the East for that eighth playoff seed, it is very tight between the Bucks, 76ers, Heat, and Pistons. The Bucks are 2 games clear of the 76ers and the Heat, who are both 2 games clear of the Pistons. So only 4 games separate 6th to 9th in the Eastern Conference. And then obviously down the bottom, you got the Hawks, Magic, and Nets. And you could even say the Bulls as well. So only 2 games, really, 2 wins separating those 4 sides. Moving on to the Western Conference, it is the Houston Rockets who, on a 10-game winning streak, take the first seeding in the Western Conference into the All-Star break. They've got a record of 44 wins, 13 losses, only 1 less loss than the Warriors, who sit in second. And also, an interesting fact about the Houston Rockets, they are actually the number 1 rated offense in the history of the NBA.
Wow.
Yeah, this offense, this season of the Houston Rockets, are the number 1 rated offense in the history of the NBA. And actually, the 4 of the top 5 greatest offenses of all time have gone on to win a championship. So could the Rockets win the championship this season, knock the mantle off the Warriors?
I think they could, actually. I mean, if they've had that 10-game winning streak, as you mentioned, so they're definitely in with a chance.
Yeah, they've been in sublime form this season. And the addition of Chris Paul, even though they've lost a lot of depth, but Chris Paul has just added a complete other dimension to the team. Obviously, him pairing with James Harden is just, it's fascinating and exciting to watch. Moving on to the bottom, towards the 8th seed there in the Western Conference, it is tight. It is between, I guess you could say it's between 6 teams. So it's between the Thunder, who sit on 33 wins in 5th, and the Jazz, all the way down to the Jazz, who are on 30 wins there. So the teams there, the Thunder, Nuggets, Trailblazers, Pelicans, Clippers, and obviously the Jazz there. So only 3 wins separating 5th from 9th, so 5th from 10th, sorry. So close in both conferences there in the 8th spot, and also at the bottom as well, because you got 4 teams who are stuck on 18 wins, the Grizzlies, Kings, Mavs, and the Suns. So there looks to be, if they're talking about tanking, there's a lot of teams tanking in both conferences. That there currently are 6 teams who are sitting on 18 wins. And obviously, that's a lot more wins than in previous seasons than the lower-placed seeds. But nevertheless, it's going to be quite interesting come the lottery. We'll move on from the standings, and we'll actually get into the NBA All-Star Weekend. And we've had the All-Star Saturday night, which took place, obviously, yesterday for us in Australia, which is Sunday. The Nets guard, Spencer Dinwiddie, he took out the Taco Bell Skills Challenge, getting a win for the guards, defeating Lauri Markkanen there. The three-point contest was a bit lackluster. It was a bit of a disappointment, but the final lived up. Three competitors lived up to expectations. It was good to see Devin Booker. He actually set a record for a performance in the final round with a score of 28 points. So that was an all-time high, and obviously gave him the trophy ahead of Klay Thompson, who was only able to salvage 25 points. And then in the final of the dunk contest, it was between Donovan Mitchell and Larry Nance Jr. It wasn't as exciting as in previous years, the dunk contest, but nevertheless, both Mitchell and Larry Nance put off a couple of very exciting and very skillful dunks. And it was the rookie, the Utah Jazz Donovan Mitchell, who was able to take out the dunk contest, even though it was probably Larry Nance who had a couple of the better dunks for the night. But nevertheless, Were you able to get a glimpse of the All-Star Saturday night?
Unfortunately, I wasn't, no. So, yeah, I haven't been able to keep up with NBA at all this season, which is quite sad. But I do have a question for you, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
Who's your tip to make the playoffs?
Make the finals?
Yes.
Yeah, to make the finals, I think it'll be the Cavs out of the East, and I'm going to stick with my prediction early on in the season, and I'm going to say the Rockets coming out of the West. So
not Houston.
You know, the Houston.
No, sorry, beg your pardon.
Golden
yes.
State, yeah. Nah, okay, not Golden State, I reckon.
I'm getting confused with NFL and NBA now. That's just bad.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, also on Friday night, it was the Young Guns, Young Stars match between the World and USA, and it was the World winning there 155 to, I think it was 123 or whatever it was. But, yeah, the World just completely dominated that match. I think they scored about 23 three-pointers, so a huge performance there from the World team. So we'll move to our shores and we'll get stuck into the NBL because the season is over and the finals take place in 2 weeks, obviously, because the Boomers are playing this weekend, so they'll have a break there. So at the end of the season, sitting atop the table was Melbourne United, sitting 2 games clear of Adelaide, who finished in second. Perth finished in third, 2 games behind the 36ers, and then the Breakers finished 3 games clear in fourth position. The Brisbane Bullets took out last place there, 2 games behind both Sydney and Cairns. So the finals matchups for in 2 weeks' time sees Melbourne United take on the New Zealand Breakers in a 3-game series. So first match will be Saturday, 3rd of March here in Melbourne. Second match on Monday in New Zealand, and then obviously on the Sunday, 11th of March, it'll be at Hisense Arena. So that's the 3-game series there, and the other one it'll be between the Adelaide 36ers and the Wildcats. So they play on the Saturday, the Friday, the 9th of March, and then the Sunday, 11th of March. So obviously Adelaide, Perth, Adelaide. So do you have any predictions for the grand final?
I think grand the Wildcats are going to win.
And the Wildcats?
Yeah, and I think they'll probably take on Melbourne. So yeah.
You think they'll take on Melbourne? All right, I'm going to stick with our boys. I'm going to go with Melbourne, yeah. I think they've been too good this season, and I do think, actually, yeah, I agree, they'll probably take on the Wildcats. The 36ers haven't really shown, not really shown, but haven't been really too good in final seasons in past seasons. So, yeah, who knows? I think it will be the Melbourne United, our boys, taking out the win. Mm. All right, we'll be back after this with a quick wrap-up. We'll be getting stuck into a lot of soccer news and, obviously, Roger Federer, again, the world number one. You're listening to the Sports Desk here on SYN 90.7 with Ben and Tom, and we're going to get stuck into our wrap-up, and we're going to start off with some soccer and the A-League. And it appears there was a split round in the A-League for this round 20, it was, and the first two games took place last week. It was between Victory, Raw, and City and Sydney. The 3 games this weekend were the maximum amount of goals for each match was 2 goals for a team. On Friday night, Western Sydney and Newcastle's 2-2. Wellington, Perth on Saturday, New Zealand time night, is 2-1. And then Adelaide United and Central Coast played out a 2-2 draw. So the standings after round 20, after 20 games played for the A-League, see Sydney FC remaining on top of the ladder, only with the 1 loss. And then you've got Newcastle leading in second place, City in third, and United in fourth. The other Melbourne team, Melbourne Victory, equal points with Western Sydney on 26. So Victory and Western Sydney are 5th and 6th. The Phoenix and the Central Coast Mariners both tied at the bottom of the table, with Wellington Phoenix only seeing themselves at the bottom due to goal difference. So that wraps up A-League. Tom, yes. You got a bit of W-League.
Yes, W-League. It was the grand final over the weekend, and Melbourne City claimed victory over Sydney FC. So finally, that Manchester sponsorship is paying off. Yes. also, first win for the club in either the male or female leagues, I believe. So there we are. The 2 goals were from Jess Fishlock, who scored it in the first half, and Jodie Taylor, who scored it off a free kick in the second half. And it was in Sydney, so the crowd were against them, but they triumphed. So, yeah, go Melbourne City.
Great performance, and good to see our girls getting a win there. Good for Melbourne City, finally getting some success.
Oh, dear.
Overall.
That's a bad Freudian slip there.
Hey, it's Monday morning. No one likes a Monday morning. So give me a break. All right.
I'm just happy my team finally won a championship. So,
this is great. All right, good success there. We'll get stuck into, and we'll finish off with tennis. And it's some good news for Roger Federer, who's become the oldest world number one in tennis history at 36 years of age. He's into the Rotterdam Open final, where he'll take on Grigor Dimitrov, but his win 6-3, 7-6 there at Rotterdam saw him claim the world number one ranking ahead of Rafael Nadal. He's taking it. He won that match against Andreas Seppi. So how long can Federer go?
How long? Well, how old is he now? 36, I believe.
He's 36 years of age.
Yeah, 36 years of age. I'm sorry to say, I love Federer. I think he's an absolutely awesome player, absolute gentleman. But I think his best years are behind him. And you know, this is slightly controversial, but the only reason he's been winning so much is because the likes of Novak Djokovic, Andy Murray, Rafael Nadal, they've all been beset by injury.
Yeah.
But still, I think it's remarkable, and you know, he probably deserves it because he hasn't been injured. I mean, look at 35 years old. Most people retire when they're 25.
It's ridiculous.
And
yeah.
I've also got some quick stats here. It's been 5 years and 106 days since Federer was last number one in the world. And so back then, Julia Gillard was Prime Minister, Barack Obama was President. So yeah, lots changed. The previous record holder for gaps between world number one rankings was back in the 90s, Andre Agassi. He had a gap of 3 years, 142 days.
Jeez, that's incredible.
Yes. And Andre Agassi was still younger than Roger when he had his number one ranking. So, yeah, definitely one of the all-time greats now.
Quite incredible there. And just got a message from Liam O'Grady, who's on the Monday Sports Desk. If you're listening to the show, I don't know why you're here, Liam. I can't remember the reason why it's not. Melbourne City are the first soccer team to do the three-peat.
Oh, okay. There we are.
You heard it there first from Liam. So he's still on the Monday Sports Desk. All right, that pretty much wraps it up for the Sports Desk here on Monday. Glad to have you, Tom. And we're going to get stuck into recording the podcast. So you can listen to both today's show and the podcast and any other show for the Sports Desk, obviously, on your local podcasting app. And obviously, chuck us a like on Facebook there. We're at the Sports Desk.